Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange, broadcasting from Gadigal country. I'm Christine Gallagher, and one of my favourite things to do is hear people speak with enthusiasm about their special interests, and that's what we're going to do today with 2SER volunteer William Little, who's here to share his specialty knowledge and love of basketball and the NBA. If you may or may not know that 2SER is the community radio station in Sydney that broadcasts the Wide Open Air Exchange. And Will does a regular sport segment on the 2SER breakfast show called The Community Armchair. He's also studying media and communications at Macquarie University and is an aspiring sports commentator. William Little, welcome. Welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange.
Happy to be here.
I know that you have a broad interest in sport, but I think for today, we might focus on your special interest in basketball.
Yes.
Five-a-side
sport. Yep.
Are there particular roles for the different positions of the five players?
Yeah, there is. So you've got your five positions on the floor. So you'll have a point guard, a shooting guard, a small forward, a power forward, and a center. So the backcourt is the two guards. So the point guard, who's sometimes called the one because he or she or they will take the ball up the court usually, and they will be the first to handle the ball and to distribute the ball. They'll be essentially the orchestrator of the offense. And then on defense, they'll be guarding mostly the fastest player on the court, or, you know, a player around their height or a person they can keep up with. The shooting guard is exactly as its name. It's mostly a shooting guard. They'll most likely shoot the ball, or, you know, distribute the ball quickly, or make real good plays. Essentially, they'll be the main scorer. Essentially, and then you have the front court, which are the tallest players on the court. The small forward is LeBron James's position. So that's the position he plays. He's really LeBron James is a different case, where he's really a Swiss Army knife, and he's the most versatile basketball player ever. He can do everything. And small forwards are usually like that, so they'll usually be able to guard most every position on the court, but they'll also be able to, you know, shoot from outside. They'll be able to pass the ball really well. They're really physical in the paint, and they'll be able to really push the pace because they'll have a good amount of speed and lateral quickness. Then you have your power forward, who would most likely be a person who would sit near enough to the post or the paint, and they would post up and distribute the ball. They would most likely get points inside. But as the game has evolved and shooting has become a lot more prevalent, especially with the three-pointer, the expectations of players on the court have changed, and we'll get to that. But power forwards can shoot. They can defend very well. They can defend some of the tallest players on the court. And they're generally expected to be like sort of the calming presence in the paint, where they can sort of slow it down a little bit. Centers are usually expected to take the brunt of the defensive load. So they'll most likely be sat in the middle of the key, or near enough to the middle of the key if you're playing NBA, to basically guard the tallest opposing player. Centers will be expected to rebound a lot.
Are you saying in the paint?
So the key. So if you look at a basketball court, you have your big arc. So
yes.
Anywhere outside that big arc, even from full court, is a three-pointer.
Yes.
Anywhere inside is a two. And then you also have your sort of rectangle with a painted area. So that's basically...
That's the paint.
That's where the most high percentage shots will take place.
Okay, this is good. You mentioned LeBron James as a small forward. How about for those other positions? Who might be some of the more famous players who have been in the other positions?
So at shooting guard, many will know Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest player ever. Shooting guard, he was really in the key moments where he shot the ball at a very prolific level. He was the first option for the Chicago Bulls, especially during their dynasty run. At power forward, in the NBA at least, would probably be Tim Duncan, because he was a very calming presence in the paint. He was nicknamed the Big Fundamental because he would have the basketball and he would mostly use the backboard to get his shots. You wouldn't see him pulling up from three a whole lot. You wouldn't see him with any fancy dribble moves. His play style was very graceful, but it was very effective, and it was very, he had a 15-year career, so his longevity was huge. Centers, in terms of centers, arguably the greatest center of all time is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, formerly named Lou Alcindor. He changed his name in protest during the late 60s. That was a political statement because of the racial tensions in America. Him himself as a black man really took that statement, and the brunt of the hatred was real, but it didn't affect his play on the court until early 2023. He was the most prolific scorer in NBA history until LeBron James surpassed him. And then in terms of point guard, in my opinion, the greatest point guard of all time is Magic Johnson, Irvin Magic Johnson. He won 5 championships. He was a great passer of the ball, great shooter of the ball. He ran the 80s Lakers, who were adequately nicknamed Showtime, along with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And you also had James Worthy on that team. And then, am I missing any centers?
I think that's all of them. Point guard Magic Johnson, shooting guard Michael Jordan, small forward LeBron James, power forward Tim Duncan, center Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes.
So one thing that might be good to explain is how the divisions work in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Now, that might not be the right term, but
it is actually a correct term.
Is that? Oh, that's good.
It is a correct term in some sense. So
can we do that?
So you have your conferences. So divisions and conferences. So you have the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. More than likely, it'll be geographically based. Sometimes it swaps around because of realignment or whatever. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, it'll be geographically aligned. So in the East, you think about someone like Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls in the 90s. They won 3 straight championships from 1991 to 1993, and then again from 1996 to 1998. So it was a historic run, 6 championships in 8 seasons. Over in the West, the Western Conference, you also had the Lakers, who are have 17 championships, tied with the Boston Celtics, who are in the East as one of the most successful franchises in NBA history. You had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who played for that team.
For LA Lakers.
Yes. You had Magic Johnson, who played for that team for his whole career. You also have the San Antonio Spurs in that conference. But also, you mentioned divisions. There are divisions in those conferences. Your Southwest, you have your Southwest division. You have your Central division, who the Chicago Bulls are a part of. You'll have your Atlantic division in the East that'll include teams like the New York Knicks.
Okay. This is good because I was confused when you said Chicago was East, because I think of it as Midwest or in the center of the US.
Yes.
So its division is Central.
Yeah.
But its conference is East.
If you divide it down
the middle, it's technically East.
Yeah, it does get a little confusing sometimes because there has been realignment in the past where teams were originally in the West, went to the East, or vice versa. But generally, right now, what we have is mostly a geographical sense. And then you also, outside of the USA, you also have one team in Canada, the Toronto Raptors, who are geographically in the East.
So what happens if the two top teams are in the same conference or in the same division? Does that mean you don't get the top two teams in the championship game? So when you decide it, the decider of who are the NBA champs, can you ever have two teams in that championship game that are from the same division or conference? That seems somewhat unfair, because what if the top two teams are both in the West, or the top two teams are in the same division in the center of the country?
You got to play in the playoffs. That's what the playoffs are for. I mean, to answer your question, no, it can't happen. That's why we have the West and the Eastern side of the playoffs. And once we get to the conference finals in the third round of the playoffs, those two teams from the West and two teams from the East, who are generally considered some of the best because they got through the playoffs. Sometimes we have Cinderella runs, but those are generally considered the conference championships. Whoever wins those in a best of 7, so first to 4 wins is a better way of explaining it, goes to the finals.
Have there been, in your opinion, any teams who have been a bit ripped off because they've been so good, but they just, for whatever, you know, they've just always been in the playoffs with a more dominant team, so it's been difficult for them to get through to the championship.
There's been plenty of teams that have been really good that just haven't come up, that've just come up short in the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs is such a grueling experience for a lot of teams. It can get fatiguing because you're playing basketball sometimes real deep into June. So it takes a lot of mental fortitude for a team to win an NBA championship. There have been plenty of teams who've come up short, especially in the Western Conference, which historically, especially throughout the 2000s, was crowded. It was a crowded Western Conference because there were so many good teams. You had the Phoenix Suns in Arizona, who were led by a two-time league MVP in Steve Nash and a superstar power forward in Amari Stoudemire, who could never really seem to crack past the Western Conference Finals. They made it there once with Steve Nash and the crew, but they never got to the finals because they ran into the San Antonio Spurs. They also ran into the Dallas Mavericks, who had another superstar in the first ever European MVP in Dirk Nowitzki. So they ran into a lot of problems out west. They came up against Kobe Bryant's Lakers in 2010, who that was a tough series for them, and they couldn't get it done. You also had the legendary Utah Jazz in the West with two players who are some of the greatest in NBA history, John Stockton and Karl Malone, just by their statistical profiles. John Stockton has the most steals of anybody ever and the most assists of anybody ever, and Malone has the most made free throws of anyone ever. So these two were amazing, and they had 18 legit shots at winning a championship, and they made two straight NBA finals, but they ran into Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls both times.
Right. That's going to be a common story, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. And you mentioned the Boston Celtics. No, I noticed that none of the players that you've mentioned so far have been Boston Celtic players. So mm-hmm. do they have a star player of all time?
It would probably be Larry Bird. He was incredible, especially throughout the 80s. The Boston Celtics of that time were just incredible. They had Larry Bird. Kevin McHale was incredible. Robert Parrish was incredible. Dennis Johnson was great. They also had a legend in Bill Walton in 1986 when they won a championship. They were just a stacked team. And that's really been historic, especially back in the 60s. They won, I believe, 9 straight NBA championships.
Yeah,
that is mind-boggling. You also had Bill Russell, who has sadly passed on. He was one of the greatest players in NBA history, certainly one of the greatest winners in NBA history. He's twice inducted into the Hall of Fame, once as a player and once as a coach. And he was really a pioneer because he was one of a few black players in the NBA at the time. And of course, it was Boston at the time, so he copped a lot of racism, especially even though he was winning championships with that team. But the Celtics are a really historic franchise with so many historic players, and just you walk into Boston Garden and you see the banners up there, you see the retired numbers up there. It's a pantheon.
Yeah, so I suppose like a legacy team, maybe?
Yeah, they're one. Yeah, the rivalry between them and the Lakers. Mm. Back when the Lakers were in Minneapolis, they were a powerhouse as well. But once they moved to LA, they were also a powerhouse. But that was the team. That was the rivalry. And that's really been the historic rivalry.
East and West.
Yes, when people think of rivalries in sports and they think of basketball, they think of the Celtics and the Lakers.
And who's your team?
The Chicago Bulls. I grew up watching the old Michael Jordan clip, so that's how I fell in love with basketball. And I've rode with the Bulls throughout that time. It's not great right now. The team is in a rut. They are a bit mediocre. They could have gotten some good futures at the deadline recently if they sold off some of their really good pieces, but management decided not to because they're on the fringes of playoff contention, which I disagree with. But yeah, I ride with the team anyway. We had some amazing moments even after Michael Jordan left the team. I was really big into the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng era of the 2010s, but that was unfulfilled promise. They didn't end up making it past the Eastern Conference Finals because they ran into LeBron James and the Miami Heat.
And You have U.S. connections, family-wise?
Yes. My dad is originally from New York City. He's from the borough of Queens, from a little suburb called Hollis. Yeah, so that's my connection there. Both his parents are Jamaican, so that's where I get my American side from.
Great. And you also have an early memory of basketball, street basketball.
I wouldn't say it's a memory. More or less, it's been recounted to me. My parents told me I was about 18 months old. We were at Venice Beach in Los Angeles, and if anyone's been to Venice Beach, you have the street basketball courts, and we were watching a street ball game being played, and according to them, I was hooked. I could not take my eyes off the game. And from there, I think that's where it started.
So what is your earliest memory of basketball?
My earliest memory is probably, if anyone has raised kids in the 2000s, who love sport, you probably heard of something called Ready, Steady, Go. My parents took me to that quite a bit.
I don't know what that is. Sorry.
But that's okay. But it was a little sports instruction class that was weekly that my parents would take me to for me to just expel some energy and play and have fun playing sport. I would play basketball there a lot. I would shoot on the little hoop a lot. That was really my first connection with not just basketball, but sports in general. And then the old Michael Jordan DVDs, the old Chicago Bulls DVDs, I was really into those, especially Michael Jordan to the Max. That was really good.
Are you talking, so you're how old?
20.
You're 20. And so when you were a kid watching old Chicago Bulls, we're talking.
So I was watching some of the old highlights from like the early 90s. Yeah. I remember distinctly watching highlights of the 1992 NBA Finals where the Bulls won in 6 games over the Portland Trail Blazers, getting Michael Jordan his second championship. I still remember when Michael Jordan hit 6 three-pointers in a row in that half, and he does a little shrug like, oh, man, I'm on fire right now.
So when did Michael Jordan retire?
He retired officially he's retired about a couple times now. So he retired for the first time at the end of the 1993 season. There was some stuff going on with his family. His father had tragically been murdered, and he was dealing with some media stuff, and he was really tired. So he decided to pursue his passion in baseball. He did some stuff with the Chicago White Sox minor league affiliate, the Birmingham, and he had a lot of fun. But there was some stuff that went on in baseball. He came back to basketball and returned to the Chicago Bulls. Then he retired for the second time after the 1998 championship. And then he returned to basketball in a management role with the Washington Wizards. He made their draft picks. He made trades. But he also stepped on the court for the third time in, I think it was 2001, and then retired for the final time in 2003.
So all before you were born.
Yes. Yay. I was born in October of 2003. So yes. He retired the previous season.
Okay. Hey, Will, this is great. I mean, I'm very impressed that, you know, this is all off the top of your head. We didn't pre-prepare anything about this, mm-hmm. what we've been speaking about. How have you come to this level of knowledge about the game? How would you explain it?
I don't know how to really explain it. It's more of a passion for me. It's truly my passion. Sports for me, and really covering sports in general, is like is one of the things that truly, like, it allows me to center myself. It brings me it's like, you know, when something feels right for you and you know it feels right, that's what it is for me with sports and, you know, covering sport in general. That's really what it is.
The actual knowledge, is that from reading, watching?
Reading, yeah. Watching, researching, really just constant researching and just analyzing and just, you know, being aware of the history of the particular game that I'm covering, or being aware of the current stuff that's going on.
Would it be whilst you're watching a game? Are you also then looking things up while, you know, are you reading about it? Or are you also reading about basketball when you're not watching a game? How deep do you go?
I think it's a mix of the both. Mm. Like when I'm watching a game, I sort of maybe look back at some other stats, or if a particular player is having an amazing game, I'll look back and see, oh, has that been done before? For example, you have LeBron James, who just passed 40,000 points, the first NBA player to ever do that. No one has even come close. So sometimes I'll do that when I'm watching a game, Or if it's like after a game, or when a game's not happening, or I'm not watching a game, or I don't have time to, I'm usually looking at like stats or how a team's going, or if it's in basketball in this case, I'm looking at what moves a team would have to make, or how they're gearing up for the playoffs. In this case, that's what I'm doing right now, as we get closer. But yeah, that's what I'm usually doing. I'm reading about the history. I'm reading about stuff that's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and do you think it takes a particular kind of brain to go deep into stats or into the sport in the way that you have?
I think the stats are one thing, because I'm terrible at math. So, but I do love sports stats. I love the sports averages. How much points is a player averaging? I love all that, but I don't like math in general. I do have ADHD. I do believe that plays a part. I don't know how big a part. I was diagnosed as a child. I don't know how big a part, but I definitely do know that people who are neurodivergent tend to have special interests. Not by and large, everyone's different. It's all a spectrum, but it definitely does contribute. I tend to have hyperfixations on certain topics in sport. I tend to go deep into something if my ADHD brain is like, oh my god, that sounds really interesting. So
like a hyper focus, lose track of time, before you know it, you've been reading about something for hours.
I've lost track of time writing a 3,000 word write up of a team's history once. Yeah. So and before I knew it, I checked my watch. I'm like, it's time for me to head to bed. So that's definitely been a factor. I don't know if it's all of it, because I believe I would love sport regardless if I was neurodivergent or quote unquote neurotypical, but it definitely does play a part, but I don't think it plays the whole part.
Yeah, interesting. So because you've been able to harness your special interest in a way that you've plugged it into your vocational interests as well. So I know that you're studying media and you're interested in sports commentary, and you do a segment on 2SER, which is the Community Armchair, which is a sports segment on the radio. So for you, your hyperfixation with sport and basketball being one of those, you're able to apply that knowledge in the way that you're aspirational in your vocational life in sports and sports commentary?
I believe so. There's a lot of challenges that come with being neurodivergent, especially with, even in my case with ADHD, it has caused me some problems at times. Sometimes I forget things quite a bit. I mess things up a lot. But, in terms of the positive side of it in sports, I do believe it's definitely helped me to harness it, especially with my interest in, sports and how I'm so focused on it. And I definitely do believe it's helped me in that regard.
So we do have to be careful about using words like a superpower for something that is, for some people, a disability.
Yeah. And I've heard from a lot of people in, on social media and whatnot about, that use of the word when it comes to people who are neurodivergent. They find it annoying.
Right.
They find it a little bit patronizing.
Yeah.
At times, like, it's a superpower. You should be happy. Huh. When a lot of it under the surface, it causes some self-esteem issues, which I've dealt with. It causes some, it can also feed into other issues like in particular, I've never dealt with this, but a lot of people with ADHD have dealt with addiction. A lot of them have dealt with other mental health issues as a result. So I do believe it can be used in a good term, but I think we have to sort of, like everything, we have to look at it holistically.
Thank you for being open about that. I think we could possibly move back into talking about your interests now. You did mention that you had played basketball, but I do have the impression that your interest is less in playing and more in commentary?
That wasn't the case when I was younger. I really wanted to play in the NBA when I was younger, as the dream is for any kid that plays basketball. But I sat with myself one day, I'm like, it's very hard to get in the NBA. And I did try out for like a different representative teams. Like, I was like, wow, there's a lot of amazing players who want to make this their life. It's like, they will do anything. So, but I found myself loving talking about it more than I enjoy playing it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love playing basketball. I love playing sports in general. I love it. And it's obviously great exercise, but I love talking about it much more than I love playing it, even though I love doing both. So I did find myself at a stage where I was like, hold on, I think I want to go into this rather than this.
And you started to experiment a bit in high school with with making videos.
And, I did. Yeah. I did. It was around year 10, which I really rediscovered that passion for, you know, talking about sport. I made a couple of satirical YouTube videos, some of which are now privated because they're looking back on them, like, wow, I was using a really crispy mic and just stuff like that. But I mean, I started experimenting with that, started tinkering. And then in early 2020, my dad, just before COVID, my dad asked me if we want to start a podcast. I'm like, yeah, why not? So we started doing a little podcast called Junior Senior Two Views.
Could you say that a bit slower? What's the name of the podcast?
Junior Senior Two Views. It's on Spotify. We post every week. It's a little creative release for myself. My dad loves doing it as well, where we sit down with two mics. We have my laptop. We have the recording stuff going. We just sit down and talk about some of the stuff with sports. He makes a rundown. I do the technical stuff with actually recording it and putting it on.
What a great bonding thing to do.
Yeah. And I'm lucky to have that. So we've done that since for about 4 years now. And then it really began on a larger scale when I joined 2SER. So I joined here in around September of 2022. Because at the time I was in the midst of my uni studies, and I found myself saying, okay, I sort of want to progress this a little more. I want to get some experience. So I joined up, and from there I just started producing some different content. I started exploring, you know, local stuff with obviously the role of a volunteer producer. You have to cater what content you produce to, you know, the Metro Sydney area and what would be relevant. So that's what I really went for. And then in early 2023, I asked Danny, who has been great.
So, Danny Chifley is the breakfast host on 2SER.
So I asked Danny Chifley, if I could come on talking about the Super Bowl, which is, you know, the championship game of the NFL. He said, sure. And that was in 2023. So I did that, and I was nervous going on the radio for the first time. But once we got going, I found myself just rattling off, and I was like, yeah, this feels easy. It came natural. When something is clear and natural, you find yourself being fully focused, and that's what it feels like for me. I found myself, it felt clear, it felt natural to me. So it became easier over time. I did another segment with him talking about the NBA playoffs, which were just starting at the time in around April of 2023. And then in early May of that same year, I started the Community Armchair.
Yeah, you seem to have that very precise recollection for dates as well. There, Will.
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. The craziest thing for me is I can remember every single first overall NBA draft pick from 2000 to now. Yet I can't remember which room I was in the house. I mean, that's just how my brain is wired. I don't know what it is, but that's what it is.
And what's the dream? What's the goal? Because they're two different things, I suppose. A goal is probably something that's a little more immediate that you're specifically working towards. A dream, perhaps something bigger that, you know, you can imagine.
Well, the goal, so in terms of a short-term thing, is to, you know, get more experience in the media space. I recently did a 6-week paid internship at ABC in Ultimo.
Good that it's paid. Good to hear.
It was fantastic. It was a great community to be around. I was doing technical producing for audio news, and that was really good to get some more experience on actually editing and, you know, leveling and audio repairing. So the goal is to get more experience, and I'm currently looking. And the dream is to be anywhere in the sports media space. So whether that be commentary, punditry, you know, analyzing behind the scenes stuff or writing, really anywhere in that space, I would love. That would be the dream.
And that would be a good place to finish, but maybe we could add, if you've got a few more minutes, only that I know from other conversations that we've had, that you have an interest in and a sense of social justice, and you care about what's happening in the world outside of sport, but you also have this sort of like an intersection, I think, for you with sport, inclusion in sport, right?
Yes, absolutely. So what I've noticed, especially with sports social media nowadays, is that unfortunately, a lot of the community, it's a very patriarchal space, and it's become very, very, very toxic. Especially if you go to ESPN's comment section on Instagram and you scroll through, you will just read a plethora of just like really negative stuff. Like there was one example of an NFL strength coach who came out as gay, and the comments were just filled with, why do we need to hear about this? Why do we care? Keep politics out of sport. When for me, they're not actually saying keep politics out of sport. They're saying keep the causes I don't like out of sport. Because things like the Orlando Magic donating $50,000 to Ron DeSantis' Republican campaign for presidency go unnoticed. That's inherently politics in sport, but they like to comment on those social issues. But for me, politics and sport has always intersected and will continue to intersect for time beyond. I mean, sport is a huge mechanism for PR, and it's a huge mechanism for getting ideas and social issues out there. So it'll never be in a situation where the two will be completely split. They'll always intersect at some point or another, and you'll always have people talking about sport and social issues, because these are humans in sport. There are always going to be social issues in sport. I mean, there have been players in the NBA who have come out as gay. John Amici was the first NBA player to come out as gay. And there was a huge controversy surrounding that, because legendary point guard Tim Hardaway went on ESPN on Dan Lebatard's show and made some incredibly homophobic comments, which he has since denounced and has since worked towards being an LGBTQIA plus ally. There's also been, if I may mention it here, there's also been a lot of discussion around the current situation in Gaza. In sport, and with players who have, in really European sport, no, not so much in American sport, unfortunately, because, you know, America has such a diplomatic ties to
very strong allies, yeah, to Israel.
The state of Israel. Mm. But in European sport, there's been a lot of protest, a lot of players of Middle Eastern descent showing support for Palestine. So social issues are always going to be a thing in sport, and even in the World Cup, with when Iran had their massive protests surrounding Mahsa Amini, who was killed by the morality police for having her hair slightly out of her hijab. When the USA played Iran, the US men's national team, in solidarity with the protesters, posted a graphic with Iran's flag that had the emblem removed because the protesters didn't want that emblem to be shown on the flag. And the players, during the press conferences, were pelted by Iranian state media with questions about that. So politics, and even Iran were forcing their players to sing the national anthem when they didn't want to, because they were threatening their families. So for me, politics and sports is always going to intersect, no matter what.
You've been making a point of covering women's sports, mm-hmm, in your community armchair segment,
yes,
as well.
I find it, and yeah, for me, I try to, when I can, I always try to profile that, because, you know, it's a platform that I've been very privileged to be able to cultivate. And I want to use that platform to be able to profile that, because especially in the NBA community, the WNBA is so hated for really little to no reason. I mean, these women in the WNBA are some of the greatest basketball players in the world. And the amount of vitriol they receive is just disgusting. And it's so misogynistic. And especially with the whole situation surrounding Brittany Griner, who had gone to Russia and was detained over there basically as a political prisoner, even though she had THC products in her bag and was detained over there, she was being used as a political prisoner. And even now with Caitlin Clark, who has become the leading scorer in college basketball women's history and is more than likely going to be the first overall pick in the WNBA draft, you've still got people, mostly men, on podcasts coming out the woodwork saying they could beat her in a 1v1. She's not even good. Like, and it really is disappointing, because we do need to see the, but I do believe the next generation is changing, because what I noted, I went to the live site for the Matildas Ireland game in the World Cup when the Women's World Cup was happening here, in middle of last year.
The live site is in a place within in a public space that's screening the game.
I went to the one in my local area, and I noted how many young boys there were, and I was really empowered by that, because I'm like, The new generation of boys who will turn into men are looking at these women killing it for the Matildas. I mean, they were watching Sam Kerr score that goal against England. It's one of the best goals I've ever seen. And that's going to be, I think that will produce change in the future. Obviously, change would preferably, in my eyes, need to happen quicker. But if it doesn't, then that could be the next generation.
And is there something to say about your parents' influence on your worldview, your mum and or dad, in terms of your understanding of some of these social issues, I wonder?
I think my mom has been the biggest influence for me. She's always raised me to have a very progressive view, to respect everybody, no matter, you know, gender, sexual orientation or identity, of no matter race, religion, any sort of any sort of disability or anything like that. She's brought me up in that household, especially a very pro-feminist household. And my father, both my parents, really in collaboration, have taught me, you know, really to show compassion and empathy for just everybody. Just because I think that's the one thing that's really missing, especially in the social media age. We're missing that empathy. And I do believe it's there, but as things get commodified and, you know, you're scrolling on social media, you're not really, it's all just like pixels on a screen. You're not really seeing, you know, the empathy in front of you. It's talked about sometimes, but I do feel very privileged to have been brought up in that household where it's really been instilled in me.
Yeah. Your parents sound fantastic. Yeah. And I don't always like to ask this question, like, what do they do? But I am curious about that.
they both work in the disability sector. My mom, she is now a social worker as well, but that's how they met, ironically enough. They met in a camp as counselors in a camp in upstate New York in 95, which helped people with physical, intellectual, and sensory disabilities. So yeah.
Love it. So is it Mr. and Mrs. Little? Are they little?
My mother is Stampoulis Little, okay. And my dad is Little. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Will's parents, great job. You're raising an excellent person here. Or you have raised, I'm sorry, you're a young man, not a boy. But Will, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and love of basketball and sports with us. And is there anything else that you wanted to say before we finish?
Me and my dad do podcast every week on Spotify, Junior Senior Two Views. If you want to check it out, go ahead. It's a friendly conversation between me and my dad. Sometimes we get a little shouty, but it's all in good fun. It's all about sport and it's a positive space. So come along if you're interested.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will. That's William Little, an aspiring sports commentator. And someone with as you can hear, a great interest in basketball and the NBA. Good luck to you, Will. I think you've got what it takes. Next week, I'm going to bring you a conversation in the realm of the sciences with a world-leading cardiologist, Professor Peter McDonald, who's going to share some of his experiences and contributions to fantastic scientific discoveries and developments in heart transplant technology. And if you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do that for free on any podcast platform, Spotify or iTunes or one of the more independent ones, whichever you use, and automatically receive each episode of the Wide Open Air Exchange for free every week. And I always forget to ask, but if you can rate and review the Wide Open Air Exchange on your podcast platform, that's a great help. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks as always to Vape Dads for use of the track Whiskey Priest for the Wide Open Air Exchange theme music. I'm Christine Gallagher. Take care and I'll see you next week.